A public park.
The Internet, 1996 World Exposition, a world's fair for the information age.
On this expo radio, Herb Teichman of Tremendous Fruit, Inc. in Eau Claire, Michigan, tells us about how they're working with Cornell University in New York to develop new varieties of apples that are insect resistant. You're also actually associated with a nursery that provides stock of these apple varieties too, correct?
That's right. We do work with South Meadow Fruit Gardens, and they sell trees. They have a catalog, and if anyone is interested in that, we have catalogs here of that. And we also sell books on apples, antique apples. One of the best books, if you have an apple in your yard and you don't know what the variety is, and the tree is fairly old, actually it should be 60, 70 years old, you might check a source that I have used, and that's a book called Apples of New York by Beach. Apples of New York by Beach. There's two volumes, and it's the best of the color plates and all, and it's one of the most authoritative books I know of in old apple varieties.
We were reading in a book called Heirloom Gardener, and it referred to that book, and it also referred to some academic institutions or museums that are preserving genetic stock of apples. Do you have any dealings with any of those kind of people?
Yes, we've been working with Cornell in testing some of their selections. They've got several new selections now that are resistant to diseases and certain insects, and we have planted about anything that looked promising in from their collection. There are people who, in fact, in New York, I think, probably one of the biggest collections, over 2,000 varieties there, I believe. And I don't know if they have they sell the fruit, but I do know they have the wood there, the cyanwood.
Just to go back to something you said earlier, you said that when you first started out, you had many different types of apples growing on the tree. Could you explain that a little bit for some of our listeners who maybe don't understand about how tree grafting works?
Oh, yes, I'd be glad to. This grafting of trees, you know, the only way that you can get an exact clone of a tree or of an apple is to take a piece of living tissue from that tree and transfer it to a living root system of a like species or tree. And we call that grafting. In some cases, you can do this with buds, transferring a bud, and that's called budding. But the necessary thing is that you have to transfer a piece of living tissue from a known variety to a living root system of another like species. And we do that each spring. In fact, I do demonstrations during tours in the springtime. We have many buses and coaches and people come in, and they want to see grafting demonstrated, and I do that on certain trees. And I have one tree out here now that has 16 kinds of apples on one tree. It's amazing during the summer from July until November to be able to pick an apple from one tree. There's always one apple ripe on that tree, and it's very interesting for the youngsters that come visiting.
So when we think about similar kind of deals, grafting tissue on animals, for example, you always worry about tissue rejection. Are all the trees that you grow here, I mean, all the apples are actually the same species? Is that why you can do it, or does it matter if it's the same species?
Yes, we have. There's a good term they use, is pome fruit, and it's a pome apple, and the apple, actually there's some varieties, some selections of apples that are not as easily to graft. Some rejection in some varieties, some strains. But generally, you can put an apple on an apple, and you can put a crab apple on a normal apple or a flowering crab, various different combinations you can put in. And it's actually beneficial to have a tree with more than one variety, or at least have more than one tree in your yard or in an area, because the pollinization. It's very important that the bee or the insect, the pollen, is transferred, or else you'd have no apples. The only way that we get an apple is to have that blossom pollinated. And it's hard for some folks to realize that the apple actually is part of the bloom during blossom time that you saw and enjoyed. And the bees visited it because they wanted to get the nectar from it to take back and for winter. They were thinking about their winter storage, and they'd make honey from it. And then, of course, as a result, we get the apple.
Now, you mentioned the importance of having bees, and I assume that mainly these are honeybees pollinating your flowers so that you'll get an apple, right?
Yes.
Do you have to bring additional bees into the orchards in order to be successful, or do you rely on your local resident population of bees?
We have to depend upon importation of bees. Now, I don't mean from offshore. I mean local. There are folks who keep bees as a business. That's a bee farming. And they rent the hives to us by the hive or by the swarm. And we have them during the period of blossom, when the flower is on and blossom, and when it's receptive to the pollinization. And those hives or swarms of bees then go oftentimes to the southern hemisphere, not the southern hemisphere, southern parts of the United States, into Florida and Texas, to pollinate some of the flowers that are necessary to be pollinated in that area, oranges, citrus, and so on, and some of the vegetables in the southern areas. In fact, our bees right now are enjoying the sun of Florida while we're sitting here with coats on.
I guess the bees are sort of a form of insect migrant labor. What are the issues regarding use of labor, you know, in order to get the apples harvest accomplished? It seems like it's kind of thing. It's still pretty much a hands-on operation, and you can't mechanize it completely. So how does that work? Do you have to bring people in to help with the harvest, or is that...
Oh, yes. We have some of the finest come in, mostly all local folks, though. We don't have much of the migrant-type help. In fact, we're geared to avoid that type of thing. We have switched to the pick-your-own. We also have a rent-a-tree, where people can rent a tree by the year. We ship apples directly from our store. We pick them ourselves. We have various varieties, which spreads the season out. So we don't have that big need for large groups of people to pick apples. And so we're getting away. But we do have adequate labor in the community, in the area. And usually it's local people. But we're getting to be so high tech in this world. The young folks today, the folks who are attending school and colleges, and they know how to press buttons. They can tell red from yellow and this type of thing. But when it comes to separating an apple from a tree or picking a ripe peach, it's out of their area of understanding.
That reminds me of something. When I was a kid, I used to pick strawberries in the strawberry fields where the area I'm from. And we had a lot of interesting things. I can think of a couple times when people came out and said, can you show us where the trees are? And we go, what do you mean? And they'd say, you know, the strawberry trees. Or another time, I remember a person picking little tiny green ones. And they said, you know, I said, well, why'd you do that? And they said, well, they'll ripen later. Tomatoes do, right? Yeah, but they won't get any bigger. Now, do you have any good stories like that to share with us?
We always have those folks calling you in blossom time in May and wondering if they can come pick apples that afternoon. Things such as that, and is this the only crop you have in a year? You know, they realize that if they go to the grocery store and there's apples there and fruits and vegetables from the southern hemisphere during our winter time, and we all lose track of the fact that a harvest season is like a sunset. It's there and gone. And if you haven't captured it and enjoyed that period, you forget it because you're the first one in line for the next crop. It's coming next year. But it's like, I think of it so much like a sunset. You've got to be there when it's ready. And there's nothing more thrilling to see someone bite into a peach, nectarine, or apple when it's thoroughly tree ripened. And the impression they have of some of the apples that have been stored for a year and then sold, it's altogether different. People can't believe it. In fact, we have young folks coming here now requesting dry, hard apples, thinking that's the way they should be. They're getting used to it. Even nectarines, they don't know what a ripe nectarine is. Some folks come here and they suggest we should eat our nectarines in a bathtub and that we don't lose any juice. This is a apple called Pitmaston Pineapple. A very poor sample that I've got here. I've got better ones in the back. But this apple is one I use for cider and apple butter seasoning. It has a very unique flavor, sweet, spicy flavor. And you can flavor apple butter and apple cider by the use of this apple. Where if you had to peel it and make a pie or make a butter from it, it would be very expensive. But you squeeze it, take the flavor and the juice, put it in your apple butter, and then you boil that down, concentrate, and that's where you get the flavor. That's the reason our apple butter is more expensive, because we do the old-fashioned way, the old-fashioned way of doing it.
Do you have a lot of people come and watch you when you're making your butter out in the big kettle?
I have quite a number of people that come and groups that come that want to see it, and then, of course, they buy as they want it fresh and warm. And, of course, I will offer them a pint of apple butter for every hour they stir the apple butter. I get them out there stirring the apple butter. I've had some takers on that, too.
I might do that.
Yeah. This is Maiden Blush, an apple that's an old apple, keeps well. It's not a very pretty apple at this year. In fact, there's quite a bit of deterioration in it now. But this Maiden Blush is one that that we sell oftentimes to the Amish community. They like that apple for some reason. They have it in their recipes, and they request it. And then, of course, we have our apples, some seedling apples that we've been observing. One thing that the industry is going toward, and that is an apple variety that resists the attack of insects and diseases. And so when we saw that apple, Tremendous Fruit number one, which had not been sprayed and had no imperfections, we thought it's worthy of testing. So we've sold it. We have people coming back and asking for it the second and third year. We have one other selection. We call it Tremendous Fruit number two. It's also a seedling. And I don't have it here on the showcase today, but it is there. A very sweet, nice apple.
Is there a few others that you wanted to tell us about, a few of your other favorite ones? So I'll let you tell us about that, and I won't interrupt you then.
Well, I so often get requests for the snow apple. I don't know who doesn't know the snow apple, especially if they're middle-aged or be over, that they haven't recalled the time when they were walking across the field to the country school and picked a snow apple. Snow apple, the proper name is Famous. It's famous in French. And that apple is here also. It's one of the most requested apples. Another is a European apple called Cox's Orange Pippin. Cox's Orange Pippin. Very popular in Europe and has an unusual, distinctive tartness. And those who get hooked on it are steady customers. We have some very interesting stories that come out of this. One time I had a call. Someone had seen an article in the paper some a year or two ago about us, about our farm and the apples that we had. One was a Famous or the snow apple. And the lady called. She said she was 100 and some miles from us, but she wanted to know if we had around 10 pounds of those apples. We said, yes, we did. That afternoon she came in. I thought, why would she come that far to get 10 pounds of those apples? But in the car next to her was her husband, terminally ill with cancer. And he had requested that one apple one more time. One time I had a fellow come in from Milwaukee, and he was a soldier in the German army. He'd been pinned down in Europe during the Second World War in an apple orchard nearby. The apple was Zabergal René, and he came here to pick up a bushel of those apples, remembering the time when he was saved by that apple. These are some of the reasons why, you know, you get into the business. You wonder why people would go to those extremes, but there are people who have that closeness to apples.
Well, tell us about some of the other fruits that you have. We're also particularly interested in your pears.
We have quite a collection of antique pears as well. Probably have 30 varieties. Some of them Flemish Beauty, Shelton, just many different varieties. But most of the pears ripen during August. And they're now overripe. The ones we have today is a selection of Asian pears. We have a Bartlett, a Bosque, and another called Luscious. I think we have Dianjo as well.
Oh, hi.
We have different varieties here, but I can't recall just what they all are now. But these are the waning hours of our season. now we're going to expect to be into a dormant season pretty quick. I think tonight might be frost.
Listening to the Internet 1996 World Exposition. Building a public park for the global village. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Your host was Marty Lucas.
Handcrafted by Becknell and Lucas.